Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places. But I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart Daters, welcome back to this week's podcast. I am so excited to bring you a conversation from across the Atlantic Ocean. I have my friend Nicole Farrow with me, who is a renowned relationship coach. She's had over a decade of experience helping couples to survive and thrive. Nicole's been a resident coach on the BBC Five Live. So she is the real freaking deal. Nicole, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So tell, how did you get into the work that you're doing? And let's just dive right into how we can make our listeners better today in their relationships.
So I actually started off in corporate coaching, bringing people together, looking at culture and how you work together and bring out the best in people, performance, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the people I was working with, executives, were having more of a hard time at home in their personal relationships than they were at work. Because at work, you've got subordinates and you've got hierarchy. And at home, it's like the Wild West. And, you know, how do you actually have healthy relationships within your marriage, with your children, all of that kind of stuff, which is obviously having a huge impact on, you know, work and performance, as we know. It's not, you know, nothing sort of siloed. So I ended up kind of leaving the corporate world and stepping into the personal relationships and looking at family dynamics and, yeah, relationships between couples, but also relationships within families and children and blending families as well, which is very much a reality for a lot of people these days. So how we kind of have healthy relationships in the first place and pass those skills on to the next generation so that they naturally inherit those skills. Because if you haven't been taught it and we don't get taught it at school, and if you haven't grown up around it, you know, we are products of our environment. So it's how we kind of really nurture that and are very conscious about that going forwards, really.
And we talked a little bit about this, you know, before we hit record, but did you come from a family that taught you these skills?
Absolutely not. No. So my parents have both been married 3 times. My mum was my dad's second wife. He had children from a previous marriage. They divorced when I was 2. It was down to infidelity. And so that was really difficult to navigate as a child because they literally hated one another and couldn't be in the same room until I was about 16. And actually, as our siblings, despite all of that, we all got on really well. But the conflict between our parents was really tough. My dad did remarry. It's my stepmom, who I still love to bits today. And we have a very close relationship. But my mum went on to subsequently marry and divorce a further 2 times. So I never kind of really saw a healthy marriage growing up until probably my dad and my stepmom. But they, you know, they were like kind of later in life at that point. And of us 6 children, as there are between all the marriages, 5 of us are divorced, myself included. So I'm very much of the opinion that you are the product of your environment. And I am that statistic of divorced, children of divorce are twice as likely to get divorced themselves. And I am that person. And so that's what makes this work that I do so important to me, I guess, because my husband is also a child of divorce and we are parents to 2 very small children. And so we really work on our marriage. And I did a lot of work between my ex-husband and my now husband and figuring out who I was and who I needed to be going into my next relationship and kind of undoing that conditioning that I'd seen as a child. To really make this work. And we are very, very active in making our relationship work and what we're passing on to our children.
That's amazing. You know, at Smart Dating Academy, we
have a system that teaches people how to date, right? To your point, we were never taught how to pick good partners, whether we had a great family role model or whether we didn't. And so we teach people about their own green flags, their red flags, pacing, who gets into your dating funnel, who gets out, how do you go from dating to exclusivity? So tell me, we address that part. Now, if somebody's listening, like, how do we work on ourselves, number one, and if we're in a new or existing relationship, tell us how we can learn these skills, because I love what you said. This is all learnable. We're not taught. So teach us, Nicole. What do we need to know from A to Z?
Yeah, well, you're completely right. It's all learnable because, you know, it's been proven now with neuroscience that, you know, our brains, you know, there is elasticity in there, and you can't, you know, that whole leopard doesn't change its spots is not true. It takes, you know, conscious work, and you have to work at it, but it is absolutely possible to change old habits. And, you know, we all have that fear, don't we, of turning into our parents. No matter how great you think your parents are, there will be certain things that you're like, I don't want to be like my mom, or I don't want
100%.
To be like. Yeah, that, exactly. And I think this generation, actually more than any other generation, has really kind of bucked the trend of following in previous generations' footsteps in terms of relationships, parenting, careers, everything. It's a whole different world we're navigating. So I think the first thing is to really, and I would encourage everybody to do this, whether you're in a relationship, single, or, you know, newly in a relationship, is to really understand you, understand your triggers, understand your beliefs. What are your beliefs about relationships? What's your beliefs about the roles of each other in a relationship? What do you have any kind of perspectives that are hampering you getting what it is that you really want? And what is it you really want? Because I don't think you even sit down and really kind of look at what is a healthy relationship to me? What type of person would I want to be with? What are their attributes? What are their values? And this is going to be based on your attributes and your values and how you, you know, see the world, and understanding your basic human needs and how you meet them for yourself. And if you know that about yourself and you become that person that you want to be in a relationship with, then I do believe that like attracts like, and you will naturally kind of, you know, put that out in terms of you attracting the person who's worthy of you, but you'll also figure out who's not, because you'll know who you are. So really knowing you, your character, your beliefs and where they come from. And if there's anything in there that you're not happy with, that actually you want to challenge, then doing the work, the mental work to change that perspective and understanding where some of those beliefs come from. Because so often we believe something about men or women or relationships or, you know, the opposite sex or what it is we're expecting based on what we've seen or what we've experienced without challenging the thought process that's gone behind that. So it's really getting to know your own beliefs, your own character, your values, your needs, who you are, and therefore who you want to attract in, because you want to be with somebody who's going to bring out the best in you. And you're going to bring out the best in them. It's not a one-way street. You have to be willing to be that person, and then you will attract that person or know when those people aren't the right people for you, because you'll know what your expectations and your standards are. And I think it's getting to know that and feeling like you know who you are and you know what you want and you know what you're willing to do to be that person that then makes it, if the other person's not willing to do that, it's like, well, I'm showing up as my best and I'm willing to work on myself. If you're not, then you're not for me. And it's only when you're willing to do that can you actually really grow into the person you want to date and then grow together when you find that person.
I love that. So can you take us, because I think sometimes we, as I call it, we sit in our own stew. We don't know what we don't know. So I can sit here and go, well, I think my thoughts are this, my values are this, here are my triggers, here's who I want. But I don't know if this is still stemming from bad trauma from the past. Can you maybe share with us, and I don't know if this is too personal, your own story of how you went from, okay, I'm coming out of divorce, and you say I did a lot of work. What was the work that you did? Or give us an example of someone who's done the work and how we should think about doing it.
Yeah, so I think it's working out who were you in that relationship? What felt good? What didn't feel good? So for example, with my ex-husband, I was doing very well in a corporate career, and he really struggled with that. He struggled with me being the breadwinner. He struggled with me being really successful. So I knew that my career and my success was very important to me, and I therefore, one of my values is really excellence and, you know, hard work and, you know, drive, and they are my values. So I would be looking for someone who appreciates those values and who can bring that out in me and being supportive, because I never felt that he was supportive. So knowing that was really, really important. I think also kind of knowing where I was playing small and where I was overcompensating for him. So kind of really reviewing who I became in that relationship. Was I happy with that person? Mm. Or if that person was a friend, or a sister, or, you know, a daughter, or whoever, what would I say to her in terms of, you know, how she was playing and showing up in that relationship? Also speaking to those who know you best, who really care for you, who really love you. There's a bit of a caveat with that one. There are really great people around you who will love you and support you and know you, but they will know you as the person that you kind of show up to be and correct. Who they expect you to be. And particularly when you're going through a divorce or a breakup, sometimes the people closest to you, they have their own perspective. They're too close and they're too emotionally involved to give you kind of objective information. So sometimes you do need to work with somebody who's a bit more removed and maybe professional. But for me personally, I've got a best friend who I've been friends with since I was 9 years old, and she knows me inside out, upside down, back to front, and she's really level-headed and kind of can really kind of see the wood through the tree. So she was a fantastic support, someone who knew me but also could be a bit more objective than, say, my mum, who, you know, would give me very different advice based on, you know, how she was feeling about the situation. So you have to be a bit careful, I think, in terms of kind of looking at other people's perspective and the lens they view you through. But thinking about who you were in that relationship, who you were before, and who you were when you left it, like, really listen to your feelings, going through scenarios of when did you feel your best and when did you feel your worst, and what was happening around that, and where were you feeling that, kind of really reflecting. And there's some fantastic tools in terms of understanding your values. For example, the example I gave you a minute ago about how he didn't like my success and how I knew that was really important to me. When you sit down and go through your values, write down your top 10 values and really think about these, like, what are most important to me, and then put them up against one another. So if, say, you've got, I don't know, respect, trust, excellence, family, for example, go along all of your values against the first one, trust, and put an asterisk against the one that's more important, trust or respect, trust or family, trust or excellence. By the end of it, you will have asterisks next to your values. That gives you your priority order. So that will tell you, actually, the top one is this, because against all the others, that's the one I always went for. And therefore, then you can start to kind of really understand what your values actually are, and trying to then look at opportunities to work and meet those values. Also understanding your needs. So we have six basic human needs: certainty, variety, significance, love and connection, growth and contribution. If you can meet all of those six on a daily basis in a really healthy way, you are, you know, really doing life well. Majority of us aren't, and there are healthy ways and not so healthy ways of meeting those needs. Look at how you meet your needs and how your relationship did or didn't meet your needs, and what you would be looking for in terms of kind of a new partnership going forwards, and not just your romantic relationships as well, because you've got to think you've got other people, you know, that you can meet your needs to as well. But it's that work of understanding your needs and your values and who you are and how you show up and how you want to be in that relationship. And I think that's a good place to start in terms of really understanding yourself. When it comes to beliefs, what's your beliefs about men? What's your beliefs about women? What's your beliefs about what a marriage or a relationship should be? What does a healthy relationship look like for you? What does a not healthy relationship look like for you? What do you really want? I think it's sitting with these questions, and you're not going to get all the answers day one. It's going to take time. But I think doing that self-reflection, so you know kind of what you want, and you'll then ask yourself, did I come up with these beliefs, or have these come from someone else? Have I heard this from somewhere else?
Or is this a reaction from
Exactly.
what I've been through? To your point, you know, if you come out of a marriage where you're the breadwinner and you were, and that from your perspective was what broke up your marriage. He didn't respect me. He resented me. I made him feel bad about himself. What often happens, we get people on the other side of that, right? They come out of divorce like, okay, now the overcorrection to some extent is I need someone who makes more money than me. And while I understand that visceral kind of overcorrection, I think what we help people to do, especially women in this situation, is understand you need someone who thinks you're amazing, pulls his weight, but you might not match dollar per dollar, balance sheet to balance sheet. But sometimes we overcorrect for things that don't actually matter. Because in this scenario, for example, let's say if you're like, I make X, so I need someone who's going to make 2X. So I'm never going to shine too bright or whatever it is, or this is just going to become a non-issue. What often happens is you see someone who doesn't respect your career as well, right? And so it's really looking for how you're feeling about yourself versus what the scorecard is from a financial standpoint.
Exactly, exactly. And you're completely right. People often either repeat the same mistakes, or they can, you know, they do the pendulum swing and they go the other way and overcompensate and go, well, obviously it's this. And I'll be honest, I came out of my marriage thinking the same thing. Well, I need to meet somebody who's earning the same or more. And actually, that my current husband, I was still the breadwinner when we met. And now we probably are more evenly matched because I've had children and I've sort of, you know, had to balance things a bit more. But actually, that wasn't what I needed. I didn't need that pendulum swing. What I needed is exactly what you said. I need somebody who really valued me and respected me. And I needed to value and respect me first and foremost. I need to be able to meet my own needs and be comfortable with who I am and know what I bring to a relationship and know that I'm a whole person with or without that person. And that I'm actually a great catch because, you know, I've done the work and I'm a really good person and I'm really worth dating and I'm really worth being in a relationship with. And from that, I'm then going to be a great wife and a great mother and I'm going to show up and I'm going to have my down days, but we're going to do it together because he's actually doing the same thing and we're not perfect, but we're willing to work at it together because we're both kind of coming from the same perspective because we have similar values. It doesn't matter whether we both like long walks on the beach and playing golf. What matters is we have shared values. And in order to know that we have those values, you have to know what your values are in the first place.
Absolutely. And that you're both committed to showing up for yourselves and for each other.
Yes, exactly. And I think unless you've done the work, you don't know what your worth is and you don't know what you're willing to do in a relationship to show up. And then you don't know when someone else isn't, because you haven't got a standard. But if you set the standard in your life of who you are and what your standard is going into that relationship, you're going to know whether that person's meeting you where you are or not. And it will be much easier to tell than if you kind of go in and not really sure and still kind of feeling a little bit broken or having not done the reflection before going into that situation.
And how do we, Nicole, how do we reflect on ourselves to say, okay, what is the problem I'm bringing to relationships?
That's a really good question. And
asking for a friend here, clearly.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think realizing you're a human being and realizing that you are not perfect, and that doesn't mean that you can't grow and you can't change, but being able to be self-reflective is such a gift. And it's something we all need to work on because it can be hard accepting some of the...
Scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. And especially when we live in a world where we see everything online and everyone looks so perfect and everyone's relationships and home lives and everything looks so great because everyone's putting their polished pictures on Instagram. No one's putting, you know, what's happening behind the scenes and on all the outtakes, you know, but we all think that that's the reality and it really isn't. And I think it is really hard to then kind of self-reflect. I think a lot of us often feel like we're failing And it doesn't matter whether that's in a relationship or whether that's in your career or whether that's as a parent. Like, I think we all have this really unrealistic sort of polished expectation now of what life's supposed to be. And we need to have more realism. But in answer to your question about how you reflect, I think you have to be willing to go there. You have to be willing to have that courage to kind of sit with your shadows or with the bits of you that you don't really like and accept them and not hide them. And I think you have to be in a certain mindset to be able to do that. But honestly, I think it's the only way that you actually really grow and move forward and pass it and kind of accept who you are. And there's always room for growth and there's nobody's perfect, but you have to kind of accept that in yourself and accept that in your partner as well. I think going into any relationship, you have to be willing to apologize, because you will have reasons to apologize. You will mess up, you will hurt the person that you love, and it won't be intentional, but you will make mistakes. And you also have to be willing to forgive, because you will also need to forgive your partner, because they will also mess up and they will also have reasons to apologize. And if you both go in with kind of that acceptance that that's what a relationship is, and then work on, and this is a thing that so many people don't do, and I think if there is one bit of advice for a healthy relationship, is learn how to have healthy conflict. That's like the most important thing you can do, because it's great when the good times are great, but if you can't repair, you can't ever grow. And if you're not growing, then, you know, law of the universe, you're dying. So your relationship's either dying or it's growing, and you need to be able to have conflict and repair and know what that is and work on that together.
How do we do that? Give us the goods.
Okay. So the best thing to do is to, when you are in conflict, remember that this person loves you. This person has good intention. 9 times out of 10, it's just really poor execution. It's often coming from a good place, or it could be coming from a place of fear or some sort of past trauma or some past trigger, but they're not doing these things to hurt you. This person loves you. This person has chosen to be with you. So try and give them the benefit of the doubt and see the good intention if you can in the moment. If you can't, stop and say, I'm sure it's not your intention to hurt me right now, but this is what I'm feeling and this is what I'm hearing. Can you reword it? Can you reframe it? Because all I've heard is this, and I'll be honest, it's starting to trigger me. Can you try again? And if you are the person who is, you know, on the flip side of that, if you can see that what you're saying is hurting or upsetting your partner, say, I can see you're taking this quite badly. It's not my intention. Let me try again. So you always have the opportunity to pause and reframe in the moment. Try and remember as well that in conflict, you need a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions. So one negative that you've said then needs 5 positives. So that could be, I'm sorry, obviously. It could be, okay, I hear you. I can see you're upset. I'm not trying to upset you. Let me try again, reframe. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with you, but I want to understand where you're coming from, or I can see you're upset and I don't want you to be upset. These are all positive interactions. You have the opportunity in the moment, 5-to-1, positive to negative ratio. If you're actually, things are just too heated, step away. You always have the opportunity to step away. If it's a case of actually we're in like fight or flight at this moment, you know, we're not able to really hear one another, I need to take some time, some space. If you're going to do that though, rules of engagement, the person who walks away has to be the person to come back and reinitiate. So it's not a case you walk away and then you think that's it, it's done and it just gets buried. You need to come, go away and then say, I will come back to you. And if you say, I'm going to come back to you in an hour or a day or whatever, and you need longer, then check in and say, I need a little bit longer. Just keep the communication open. If you do step away, don't step away and dwell on it. This is something I used to do. Don't step away and then be calling them all the names of the sun and how can they do it? The reason you stepped away is to actually try and emotionally regulate. So try and do something that calms you, that takes your mind off it, that allows you to come back to the disagreement in a kind of more settled, you know, type, whether that's going for a walk, doing some, you know, breath work, whether it's doing, you know, having some, doing some exercise, watching something on TV that's completely like different, whatever it is, cooking, whatever you need to do, but don't dwell on the argument, like leave the argument and then think about it again when you're a bit more rational and you've emotionally regulated, and then come back. Massive myth about going to bed and never going to bed in an argument. If you are really wound up with one another, there is no point staying up in the moment arguing and making yourselves really tired and grouchy the next day. That's not going to help, especially if you've got kids. Is it going to get you up? It's just not worth it. It's better to park it and come back when you can and just agree when that's going to be. Outside of conflict, though, this is where the magic really happens. Talk to each other about conflict and how to manage conflict when you're not in it.
So, amen. During peacetime, not wartime.
Yes, exactly. Because you're not at your best at that point.
So, for sure.
Talking about what are your triggers, how does it feel to be on the receiving end of conflict with that person? What does that person do that really hurts you or makes you angry? So that, because they might not even be aware, they've never been in an argument with themselves. So they don't know what you're seeing and what you're receiving. And they don't know all your past traumas necessarily and what it's triggered for you. But actually sitting down and talking about that and spending more time out of conflict talking about it, understand your conflict style. We all have one. A lot of the time it will come from your family of origin. I come from a volatile family. I am a volatile, like, conflict. My husband style. My husband is an avoidant because his family are all avoidants. So you've got an avoidant and a volatile. You know,
brilliant.
Understanding that about each other is really, really helpful in the moment, because then he can understand where I'm coming from and I can understand more where he's coming from. So just exploring these things together, that is going to serve you so well in actually reducing conflict or repairing a lot quicker.
Yeah, I love that. I love all of this. And I think that those peacetime strategies are so important, to your point, when you talk about when you're in conflict, right? And you and I were chatting. I've got two teenagers, a husband of 27 years, right? Things go fast because you know how to push each other's buttons. But we've had this strategy. I tell my kids, like, boxers go back to their corners, even when they're beating the hell out of each other, right? Every 2 minutes, they go back to their corners. They wipe off. They, you know, maybe somebody's got to stitch them up, whatever it is. But it's okay at that moment. And I'm usually the one that calls this, like, hey, let's press pause on this. I need a break. I think we all need a break. It's spiraling. Let's go back to our corners and come back to this. And so we've put that strategy together. I'm not leaving this conversation. I'm pressing pause, because if we don't, we go back to the knives get sharper, the skin gets softer, and then you can't recover from that, right? When you say those harsh words, it's like getting cuts on your skin. Your body is amazing and it heals. But when you look in the light, you can always see those scars.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. I love that boxing analogy. I've not heard that one before, but I'm definitely going to use it.
Yeah. Boxers go back to your corners, de-escalate, come back, and everybody can say and have those code words with your loved ones. You know, with my kids, I'm like, you're going hard. Is that your intention?
Yeah.
Right. Meaning the words are starting to hurt. And they know that means I'm going to press pause real fast and leave. I love you. This isn't moving in the right direction for either of us.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing. It's all communication, isn't it? And whether you have specific words or, you know, phrases or whatever that you need to use just to communicate where you're at, I think is because you do, as you said, like, the intention is you love each other. You don't want to hurt one another. So you're going to say something, as you say, in the moment that's going to hurt. And this is the thing, you have to realize that the relationships that are worth fighting for, that you really love, they are going to hurt you and you're going to hurt them. So being able to repair is so, so crucial. And probably a top tip, particularly for anyone who's a validator conflict style, who like try to smooth the way really, really quickly, or I see this quite a lot in men, I'll be honest, is they try and rush to the solution, and then it leaves the partner feeling like they have their feelings haven't been heard and they've been dismissed. So there is a big difference between understanding and agreeing. You don't have to agree with someone to understand where they're coming from or understand their perspective or hear them or see them in their pain and to acknowledge that. and saying, I hear you, I see you, I understand you, is so powerful in terms of connection. You don't have to say, I completely agree with your point, I'm wrong and you're right. That's not what you're saying. You're just saying, like, I'm connecting with you because I love you and I can see that you're hurting. And that is incredibly powerful in an argument, but also even if you need to walk away and come back and be able to do that, it's still that part of that repair, which are the skills we all need to have. And sadly, I think a lot of us are lacking because we haven't been shown it. And there's no disrespect to our parents, because I don't think they were shown it either. So
it's so true. And I think when you deploy these strategies, I did not grow up in a home that resolved conflict well, right? Everything I do now, I've learned. But when you realize, even when you get into these arguments or these spats or whatever, and you press pause and you walk away, it's pretty amazing when everybody's on the same page. You're going to have conflict anyway, but it's amazing how quickly I can personally now, Nicole, self-regulate, because I know, because we've done this so many times, that it's going to be okay. And walking away is great. And I'm a really good compartmentalizer, right? Like, something can be burning over here, but I can quickly put my blinders on and get into something else. So that's also a great regulating skill. Go do something else at that moment. When you press pause, find the thing that's going to help you really relax, whether it's listening to an inspirational podcast, maybe not meditating at that moment because you're still, but like for me, it's kind of like drowning out the crazy in my own head and just having somebody bring me some joy, making me smile, calming me down. It's like you start to realize, like, oh, this is how I do this. And you suddenly, and you get better at it so quickly. So putting these strategies into place, and even for those of you who don't have a romantic partner, you can do this with your siblings, with your colleagues, with your parents, with your friends, right? You can do this anywhere, because any relationship that is a true relationship will have conflict. Do you agree with that?
100%. And to be honest, I hear it a lot. Oh, we don't argue. That to me is a red flag. There should be an element of conflict. And there's a very big difference between unhealthy and healthy conflict, but no conflict isn't healthy. And actually, that is, to me, where you see the resentment building up. And it's the, you know, sadly, the deterioration of a relationship can come really, really slowly over a period of time where people just sort of check out because they're, you know, they're not resolving things and they're just moving in different directions. And that can be, you know, as you say, not just in romantic relationships as well, but they kind of disintegrate very quietly and slowly. And that's not good either. So I actually think that, you know, if you're having conflict, it means you're communicating. It means that you're passionate. It means you're still involved. It means that you're still attached. You know, the opposite to love is not hate, it's indifference. And it's so true. If you're wanting to get your point across, that you care what the other person thinks of you or about this situation or whatever, that's what's creating conflict. And you're two individuals as well. And I think if you're not having conflict, my other concern would be that whether you've either checked out or whether you've kind of morphed to the point where you don't actually have your own identity and your own passions and your own character, and because that should create conflict in itself as well. There's, you know, there's that kind of nice rubbing along together. And then there's also, you know, occasionally you're going to have a disagreement because you're going to have a different point of view. And that's healthy if it's done in the right way.
That's right. Right. A relationship is a container. And you need to keep the dust out of a container and clean it out on a daily basis. When people say, pick your battles, I'm like, no, clean the container out. If something was an ouch, get through it, talk about it first, self-soothe, right? And if you need to talk to the person about it, talk to the person about it when you're calm, but don't let those things build up. I tell all of my clients, a relationship is a black, glossy bowl, right? That sits on your coffee table in your living room. And black glossy is beautiful, but it shows every bit of dust. And so you can let all the dust accumulate over a month. It's going to be harder to clean. And when you have to clean it, you're probably going to scratch the surface. Instead, when you see the dust, just gently wipe it out with a dry cloth. And now it's clean again. And that's a metaphor for a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard another one actually recently where a divorce lawyer was telling me that Divorce is like going bankrupt. It happens really slowly and then all at once. And, it's those who say, I didn't see it coming and it happened out of the blue. And I think there's never, it came out the blue. It's just you've chosen to ignore it, or you've allowed the dust of, to your metaphor, to build up, and you've looked the other way.
100%. So, Nicole, any last gems you want to drop on our smart dating audience?
In terms of healthy relationships, the other thing I would say is it's the bids for connection. You've got to have them daily. You need to be able to have healthy conflict, but also find ways to connect with each other every day. And that doesn't matter if it's your romantic relationships or any relationships that, matter to you. It's the little bids for connection. It's connecting with one another that I think is so key to humanity. And what, to be honest, digital is great, but it's kind of gotten a little bit in the way of connection. So it's made it more accessible, but we seem to do it less. So I think it's showing up and connecting with one another, on a regular basis, leaning into the people that you love the most, and that will keep you connected and keep you going.
I love that. And I can add a little specific example into that. Like phones, my kids, Jaden and Max, are 16 and 20, and they're always on their phones and they're, oh, TikTok and this and that. And so now I've realized there are certain moments in the day, and maybe not every day, but I try to do this once a week. Like, show me the funniest thing that you've seen on TikTok. What is, like, show me what the trends are. I'm old. Like, and they're like, really? You want to see something funny? I'm like, show me what's in your world. And that has changed things so much. I'll crawl into bed with them, get in on their inside jokes, and they love it, and I love it. So instead of looking at it as the demon, and I think so many of us parents do, instead, jump in with them, listen to their music. Understand why they like it. And it's game changing because suddenly they feel seen by you, the parent. You're interested in me. You want to know about my music and TikTok. You hate my phone. I'm like, no, I want to see what makes you laugh. What do you think I would like? And they're like, oh, you need to watch this video. And oh, this is where this trend came from. And it's been amazing. Just switch your lens.
100%. My children are much younger, but it's no different to me getting involved in their game. It's their imagination, and I'm playing my role, and I'm playing along in whatever it is that they're doing. And it's exactly the same. Your children are just playing a different game. They're on a different platform. It's a different, thing that they're doing, but it's exactly what you're saying. It's meeting them where they are and connecting. And it's so important to our relationships and, where we're going. So, yeah, connect.
Nicole, thank you so much for all of these gems that you've given us. And smart daters, I hope that you learned a lot from this episode. I certainly did. And Nicole's making me think. It's like, what are your beliefs? What are your values? What are your shadows? How do you come to conflict? What triggers you? What is your responsibility for this? And I encourage you, as I will, to sit down and really think about it and self-reflect. And what is a way that you can reflect and be better for yourself, most importantly, not for anybody else. So I leave you with that today. Again, Nicole, thank you so much for bringing your wisdom to this show and this podcast and Smart Daters. If you love this episode, please go in and give it 5 stars. Tell us what you love about it. Share it with your friends. We are the little podcast that could, and appreciate all of your support. And until our next episode, we wish you a wonderful week full of love.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.